Tuesday, March 1st, 2011, episode number 18 of the Bucketcast. Your host, Coach Schmidt and Nick McIver. And on this episode, we're talking with Mr. Kevin Pelton from BasketballPerspectives.com. Then after that, me and Nick talk about the NBA trade deadline. I have a rant about a guy in LA that wears number 24. And much, much more. So everybody, stay tuned and enjoy episode 18 of the Bucketcast.
To begin, we are North Americans, and for those of you who still think we're from England, we're not. No.
Yeah. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 18 of the Bucketcast. Of course, I'm Star Schmidt, and alongside me this week is Mr. Nick McIver. Nick, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing okay.
Yeah, we could be doing better if the Bucks remembered how to win a game. Is that right, Nick?
Yeah, or just make a basket. That could be a step.
Yeah. Yeah, the Bucks are on a losing streak. On we can't win a game to save our life. Winning streak. We can't make a shot to save our life. Streak, and like last week's show, we're not going to go game by game by game, talk about every single game, because of the fact that it's going to be too depressing for both me and Nick. And frankly, if you're listening to the show, you know the situation that's going on with the Bucks right now, right, Nick?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about the trade deadline. A little bit in what the Bucks should have done, so we're going to take a quick break. Oh, yeah, we're also going to talk to Kevin Pelton from Basketball Perspectives. I forgot about that. So you're going to listen to Kevin Pelton. Then when the Kevin Pelton thing is done, we're going to me and Nick are going to come back to talk about some trade deadline and other stuff associated with the Bucks. So we'll be right back. What are you saying? What are you Skyping me?
Oh, sorry.
Dribble up and down the court, just like I'm the king on the microphone. So it's Dr. J and Moses Malone. I like slam dunks and taking it to the hoop. My favorite play is the alley oop. I like the pick and roll, I like the give and go, cause it's basketball, but Mr. Kirch's flow.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Bucketcast, and it's my pleasure to be joined by, I guess, a celebrity in the basketball blogosphere. We're joined right now by Kevin Pelton from Basketball Perspectives and ESPN Insider. Kevin, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. I'm wearing shades, yeah, because I don't want people to recognize me because of all that celebrity in the blogosphere.
I don't think you need to worry about that. Maybe people will. Maybe your hands or something like that, because of all the typing. People might recognize the fingers, but I don't think you need to worry about random everyday ordinary people worrying about you in real life. But you are a big name. You have 3,000 followers on Twitter. Lucky guy. But yeah, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Glad to be past the trade deadline. It was a fun day as always, and a busy week cranking out probably like 20,000 words of copy, analyzing all the trades that went down. So now is the best part, because we get to see how all these guys fit in with their new teams and how it's going to shake up the league.
Yeah, most definitely. And of course, one of the bigger trades in the past week was the Carmelo trade. And I last night on Thursday, it's gonna be a different day when I put this out there. But I was watching the Nuggets Celtics game, and even though like everybody was like struggling, not a lot of people could shoot. Gallinari couldn't shoot. Felton couldn't shoot. But you know, in April, that team could be like deadly in the playoffs.
If nothing else, they're already really entertaining because of the fact that they've got just a bunch of interchangeable athletes. They've got guys who like to play in up-tempo. You know, last night they threw out Felton and Lawson together there for a stretch in the fourth quarter very successfully. And, yeah, I mean, since dealing Carmelo, they're 2-0. They're hanging in there with Portland right now as we speak. And, you know, I wrote about this for ESPN Insider a couple days ago, and they actually still have quite a lot of talent on the roster. You know, they don't have anyone at Carmelo's level or Chauncey Billups' level. They don't have that one guy anymore, but they have a lot of depth and a lot of players who can contribute something. So they're going to be an interesting team to watch. I think they're going to make the playoffs and play an entertaining first-round series against someone like San Antonio.
And right now the big-time player in this Portland-Denver game is Gallinari, who has 12 so far. The game is in the second quarter.
Yeah, late second quarter, just about after.
And I was actually a big fan of that trade in the Nuggets perspective. Of course, the Knicks got the superstar in like Carmelo Anthony, but the Nuggets, you know, they got Gallinari, who's averaging about like 18. Chandler, who's averaging about like 17, 16. Felton, who I actually kind of liked in Charlotte, and he was doing really good with the Knicks, and he got some big guys in Mozgov and Kufos, who are just gonna be, you know, kind of like really not that good, but you know, you can't have enough big guys. Or foreign, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, for being in a situation where everybody in the world knew that they had to trade Carmelo Anthony and that he was likely to leave as a free agent this summer if they didn't get something done, you have to like the job that Masai Ujiri did of being patient and playing the Nets and the Nuggets off each other a little bit, keeping increasing those offers until the point where they really accomplished about everything they wanted, except for maybe, you know, not getting quite as many draft picks as they would have hoped, but they got a lot of talent in return. They cleaned up their books financially quite a bit, and you know, I think their future is, you know, it's not immensely bright, but they've got a chance to put together a pretty solid team in the next couple of years here.
Yeah, and I think the Nuggets GM could be in the running for executive of the year if the Nuggets do good for the rest of the season.
Well, he might get some credit there, but his natural general manager told me, yeah, it's got to be Pat Riley. Yeah, GM emailed me after I picked someone else. I think I picked, I don't know, R.C. Buford maybe? That's been R.C. Buford in my mid-season analysis, and they were stunned by that choice and didn't understand how it could be anyone but Pat Riley.
it's kind of hard to go yet to get it, but LeBron James and I guess Chris Bosh. Even though Chris Bosh is really struggling right now, but Bosh is a multiple All Star and he's a decent player. But you know, bringing LeBron and
Kobe, he was still part of the vision.
Yeah, yes. Even though he had one of the worst games in NBA history on Thursday night.
Yeah, that was almost painful to watch on his part, but yeah, you put together a team like that is poised to compete for a championship and has two of the top five players in the league, and yeah, I think you deserve executive of the year for that.
Riley still has gray hair at his older age right now. I don't know if it's a hair plugs, but he's still looking good for a, I think he's in his 60s or maybe 70s.
Yeah, he's still got the Michael Douglas thing going on. You know, they looked similar in the 80s, and now they look a bit older, but still hanging in there 20, 30 years later.
Another team that I liked in the during trade deadline is the the Portland Trailblazers. They got one of my personal favorite non-Bucks and Gerald Wallace. Actually, the Trailblazers are actually my Western Conference team. Of course, you have Wes Matthews, who is from Marquette. You know, you have Aldridge, who, you know, is kind of a really is an underrated big man in the NBA, and you bring cash, Jared Wallace, who is also one of the more underrated players in the league.
Definitely, they've got, you know, some really interesting pieces, and you know, Portland is the team I follow most closely out here in Seattle, and that's where I can get down to games from time to time. So I'm looking forward to seeing how Nate McMillan sort of deploys all these guys. The last couple weeks since Marcus Camby's been out of the lineup, they've gone to a lot more small ball with LaMarcus Aldridge in the middle. You know, they had been playing Dante Cunningham alongside him or Nicholas Batum as power forward, and now instead they get to put Gerald Wallace into that spot, and he's a guy who gives them a lot more rebounding from that position but still has the same kind of athleticism and ability to stretch the floor, you know, to some extent. And it's just simply a much better player than a guy like Dante Cunningham, you know, a nice role player, but not a guy who's an all-star like Gerald Wallace was a year ago. So, you know, I think that's a team that's going to play a lot more up-tempo basketball, be very entertaining, and be very successful the rest of the way.
Yeah, and another team I want to talk about involves a former Buck. Mo Williams is taking his talents to L.A. He's leaving Cleveland to you know, play with the rookie of the year Blake Griffin and a questionable.
I think you go ahead and give it to him.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be rookie of the year.
Yeah, most definitely. And a questionable, I guess, owner in Donald Sterling.
Yeah, that was one of the week's more unexpected trades. I think we had a lot that sort of came up out of nowhere, but that one, you know, went from being, huh? What is this on Twitter? It's a done deal in about a half an hour. So it was kind of hard to process at that point. You know, the Clippers' main motivation clearly is to get rid of Baron Davis's contract and get some more cap flexibility going forward the next few years. It could really help them in the summer of 2012 when, as we know, there's poised to be a bunch of star free agents, especially at the point guard position. So, you know, and then in the interim period, you know, Mo Williams is not the creative playmaker that Baron Davis is, so they'll miss some of that, but I think Aaron Gordon can help out a little bit in that regard, and Mo Williams' shooting will be really nice for them to have alongside, you know, those guys who, you know, Griffin can command a double team, that sort of thing. And Baron Davis, as we all know, a very low percentage 3-point shooter.
I'm going to like seeing Mr. Mo Williams actually a play for a good big man, of course, when he was with the Bucks. Andrew Bogut was still kind of coming into his own, and, you know, Blake Griffin still in his first year is just a flat-out beast, and he's going to be an all-star for probably the rest of his career. And like you said, Mo Williams can shoot. Griffin's probably going to get double-teamed, and Griffin could just, you know, push the ball out to Mo Williams, who can, of course, knock down that three.
Yeah, that should work out nicely. And I mean, I think one of the underrated things that we really didn't anticipate Blake Griffin doing as well as he has is his ability to distribute the basketball, not only out of double teams, but also sort of creating off the dribble and finding guys.
Yeah, most definitely. And he's not just all about dunk. Everybody, like, thinks of Blake Griffin and they think, he's a great dunker. But, like you said, he can pass. And even though this is his second year in the NBA, of course, he was injured last year, but he's still 22 or 21, I think. And And yeah, he's still probably going to improve. He's probably going to be a better shooter, probably going to be better defensively. And yeah, Elliot, the Clippers really have something if all goes well for Griffin.
I mean, obviously the question mark, you know, is like you mentioned, it's their ownership situation and how that's going to affect things. But, you know, I think that Gordon and Griffin have the potential to be as good as any inside-outside combination in the league within the next couple of years here. I mean, Gordon's kind of the guy who gets overshadowed by everything like Griffin has done this year, but he's coming into his own as a young star in his own right. So, you know, you have DeAndre Jordan, a nice young piece at center. They have some other rookies, Eric Bledsoe and Al-Farouq Aminu, who could potentially develop into starters and add some cap space on top of that. You're in L.A., even with Sterling. I don't know if he can screw this one up.
He has screwed a lot of things up, especially his relationship with the aforementioned Baron Davis, but they don't have to worry about that anymore. One of the trades that basically shocked the NBA nation on Thursday of the year during the trade deadline is the Boston Thunder trade.
Yeah, definitely. That one was unexpected. You know, I mean, I think people were looking at the Celtics potentially making a move for a backup wing to replace Marquise Daniels, expecting something like that, a guy like Anthony Parker. And instead, bam, you trade out a guy who's been a starter for years in Boston and come up with two players who are going to shake up the rotation a great deal. You know, I think it's easy to understand what Boston was thinking. They've succeeded this year with Perkins playing a small role coming back from his torn ACL. He may not be the same player. He's a free agent after this year and could command a great deal of money on the open market, you know, as centers often do. And then there's also the fact that, you know, matchup-wise, a guy like Jeff Green may give them more flexibility with the option to play backup power forward in addition to replacing Daniels with their backup small forward, so they can match up with teams that go small against them in a way they couldn't with that bigger front line with Perkins and Garnett. So I can understand what they're thinking, but I still think they're going to miss Perkins' toughness, his defensive presence. You know, I think everyone forgets that when Garnett was out of the lineup 2 years ago, he really developed into a very good defensive anchor and helped them lose very little on the defensive end when Garnett was out in the playoffs and late in the regular season. And, you know, I just think he's a solid all-around player who's going to help Oklahoma City quite a bit and who Boston is going to miss.
Right now the Thunder win the trade. They get a center that they really didn't need, and now they have a contending team, a contending starting five, a contending just an entire team that can contend. I mean, you can contend a lot, but they are a team that can actually do that. Of course, you have Durant, Westbrook, Harden, who's gonna improve during the next few years. Serge Ibaka, who's only 21, but really is improving, and I am a huge fan of Serge Ibaka. Now you have Kendrick Perkins at center, who can bring the size to the Thunder, who they really didn't need. They really didn't need a lot of size. And bringing Nate Robinson off the bench really, really helps them.
Yeah, it gives them a totally different look, you know, because they've played a lot of kind of small ball with Jeff Green at the four, and Ned Kirstich is not necessarily small at the five, but he's not a space eater in the paint. He's a guy who likes to play that pick and pop game. So now they're going with a totally different look. So, you know, there is a risk to the extent that their new starting front court is presumably going to be Kendrick Perkins and Ibaka. And those guys aren't as good perimeter shooters. They're not going to space the floor as well. But defensively, that's an enormous upgrade because Ibaka is a very good shot blocker. We know about Perkins' ability to defend the post, and he's also a good help defender, you know, very solid positionally, understands schemes. So Oklahoma City has not been very strong on the defensive end this year, and I think this helps them quite a bit. And they should still have a solid backup front court where they can bring Nick Collison off the bench and then also Nazem Kadri, who they got yesterday. So I look at this team and think it's better than everybody in the East but the Lakers in San Antonio. And I think they could potentially compete with one of those teams in the second round of the playoffs this year.
Yeah, they almost beat a Lakers team with Chris Sage as the starting center last year. Now adding Perkins, who is only 26, and has a lot of potential. I mean, a lot of experience, you know, in the league. And that team is probably that team is going to be, like I said before, contending in the next 5-10 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people would love to see them play the Lakers again. You know, Perkins is a guy whose size can really help neutralize Andrew Bynum and work against Pau Gasol as well. So that gives them an additional matchup advantage. And like you said last year, that was already a very close, very hard-fought series between those two teams.
Mm-hmm. Other than the teams that we talked about, what are – oh, wow. I forgot about one huge trade involving former Wisconsin Badger, of course, Devin Harris, and some other guy named Darren Williams. Have you ever heard of him? Some average, below average.
Never ring a bell.
Yeah, doesn't ring a bell, but Darren Williams does – move on to the Knicks, big time rival in the Knicks. And I'm like, do the Nets really need to make that trade? Because they're probably not gonna make the playoffs this year, and Williams is gonna be a free agent next year, I think, right? And do you see the Nets making a playoffs next year with Williams at the point guard?
I think it depends on what they do this summer. They're certainly going to need to have a more productive effort in free agency than they had this year, where, you know, a couple of their guys, Travis Outlaw and Johan Petro, are really big disappointments that they've signed. So you know, they're going to need to add some talent. Right now, if you look at it, I think they probably have 3, maybe 4 starters in place in terms of Williams, Brook Lopez, potentially Chris Humphries. I think he may be a free agent himself. And then Anthony Morrow is a, you know, solid shooting guard. He's certainly acceptable as a starter. But small forward is a position they definitely need to look to upgrade. And then they've also got to get much, much better on the bench. They have so many guys who are playing minutes who are just – really weak compared to other teams' benches. Stephen Graham, for example, has been a regular for them, and he currently has the most negative wins above replacement player in the league in the statistic that we use at Basketball Prospectus. So as you outlined, it's a big risk for New Jersey, but when you get the chance to get a superstar like Darren Williams, you know, I think it's understandable to take that and see if we can figure out something later and convince him to stick around, or if the situation changes with the new collective bargaining agreement where it's going to be difficult for him to head to another team. That's why I was kind of surprised that Utah made this move now, whereas it's possible, you know, there could have been a franchise tag, there could have been salary differences that made it much more onerous for a player to change teams instead of sticking around. You know, I would have waited it out to see kind of what played out with the CBA before making that move with Darren Williams.
Yeah, and I actually really do like the trade for Utah. Of course, they do get a Devin Harris and Derek Favors, who kind of has been disappointing, but the thing is, he is only 19, and he still has a ton of potential, and Utah really has changed, I guess, for better or for worse in the past few weeks. You know, a month ago they had Williams and Sloan, and basically Sloan left because he couldn't deal with players like Williams, and I guess two weeks after Sloan left, Williams is gone. What is really going on with Utah?
Yeah, I mean, if you had named two guys associated with the Utah franchise 2 weeks ago, it would have been Jerry Sloan and Darren Williams, and now they're both out of town. But it was kind of a gradual process where, you know, they've lost a lot of talent over the offseason because of the fact that they had such a high payroll and weren't able to go deep into the luxury tax to re-sign guys like Carlos Boozer and Wesley Matthews, another Marquette guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they were not the same team. And early on in the season, they kind of covered for that by winning a few of these games on the road, coming from behind. But they still weren't playing very good basketball for 48 minutes. And eventually caught up with them. And you saw them sliding in the playoff race the last couple of weeks. And I don't think that they've made the playoffs, you know, even if they would have hung on to Deron Williams. So that's when it raises questions about, you know, how are we going to get better? How are we going to convince Williams to stay if we can't even make the playoffs? You know, think of the situation where, like I said, I would have been more patient with it, but they were going to confront these issues at some point, weren't good enough to compete in the Western Conference, and I just don't think they were. So, you know, what they did do by striking now is they got an interesting piece in Derek Favors, who is a guy who still has, you know, as you talked about, a lot of potential. He's very raw, but I think defensively he already can help them a little bit while growing into his offensive game. And they also get, you know, a couple of solid first-round picks out of the deal, and a good point guard in Devin Harris. You know, it's not like they're going from Deron Williams to nothing at that point. They're going to a guy who was an all-star a couple of years ago, and if he's has the right frame of mind and is putting in some effort at the defensive end, can get back to that level in Utah.
Is there any other traits that are noteworthy?
Well, you know, I think there's some interesting little moves out there. You know, Houston picks up a couple of late first-round picks and buys low on Goran Dragic and Hashim Thabeet. In terms of playoff outcomes, you know, you look at Memphis adding Shane Battier to solidify their wing position where Rudy Gay is out for the next few weeks. That should help them make the playoffs as the eighth seed. Atlanta and Washington made a deal where, you know, the Hawks are thinking that they can compete with the best teams in the Eastern Conference by upgrading and getting Kirk Heinrich at the point, you know, especially at the defensive end, which had been a major weakness for them, stopping point guards with Mike Bibby at that position. He should help that quite a bit. I think the gap is too big for them to really compete with the best teams in the East. So given that, they gave up a lot of young talent by dealing both Jordan Crawford and this year's first-round pick. So you wonder how they're going to get better in the years to come. But a nice move for Washington there to get some value for Heinrich, who didn't really make a huge difference because they weren't going to make the playoffs the next couple of years anyway.
Is there really any potential for Thabeet to be what he could have been? Of course, he's still in the second year, but is there still any potential there with Thabeet?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a reason he was the number two pick in the draft. You know, he was a reach a little bit at that point, I think, and I think most people thought that, but we certainly thought that he could be a solid center. You know, he's the Big East co-player of the year with DeJuan Blair, who's been a solid NBA player. You know, that size gives him the potential to be an impacted defender in the league, and we saw him use it at times his rookie year, and he's just regressed so badly this year. It's kind of inexplicable how much he's gone downhill. So I think the thing that going to Houston gives him a fresh start, gives him a situation where there's more confidence and less questions about his ability like there were in Memphis. I think he can become a serviceable backup center and maybe even, you know, an adequate starter. You know, the comparison I've made is to Darko Milicic when the Orlando Magic picked him up from Detroit a few years back. Similar situation, number two pick, major disappointment, not playing many minutes, not playing well when he did get on the floor. The Magic were able to rehabilitate Milicic a little bit. I mean, he obviously was never going to live up to the hype that accompanied him when he first was drafted, but at the very least, he was able to become a solid center in the league, and, you know, now he's a starter in Minnesota.
Okay, now the deadline talk is done, let's move on to the Bucks. So, I guess we can still keep on talking about the deadline a little bit. Did you know basically we're just going to stay still during the deadline?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised. That wasn't a team that looked like, you know, necessarily they had the potential to make a big move because, you know, I'm not sure who they have in their rotation, you know, that other teams are going to really want that or at least going to value more than Milwaukee would. So, you know, especially when you look at the fact that they've done so much dealing within the last year or so. When you go back to last year's trade deadline and getting John Salmons, you know, most of probably half the rotation is guys that are in their first or second years with the Bucks. So it doesn't make sense, I think, to make big changes that quickly with that group.
Yeah, right now, actually, Luke Richard Mamute and Andrew Bogut are the only players that have been with Skiles for the last three seasons.
Right, yeah, you've changed things up quite a bit. So, you know, I mean, potentially making, if you were going to do anything, it would probably have to be a situation where you're making sort of a challenge trade and, you know, use my problem for your problem or guys of similar ability and just you're hoping that you can get more out of them. So, you know, I don't know that there was anything out there that would have been a slam dunk for the Bucks either way.
I think there's a trade out there with New Orleans where we could have got, like, Ariza and Quincy Pondexter, but, like, Ariza is, I guess, is like a Bucks kind of player, you know. Not a lot of offense, but a lot of defense. And we have a lot of those players right now in Milwaukee, and we need an offensive guy really badly in Milwaukee, and Ariza really wasn't that kind of guy. I really don't know a lot about Quincy Pondexter. I don't know what kind of player he actually is, but, you know, what do you think about that potential trade?
Yeah, I think you're spot on when you say that Ariza, if you looked at the stat line, it kind of looks similar to a lot of guys who are on the Bucks. So, you know, I don't know that he would have changed anything too dramatically. Pondexter's a guy I'm very familiar with. He's a University of Washington guy, as am I, out here on the West Coast. So, you know, he's very similar, I would say, to Desmond Mason, a guy that Bucks fans know well.
Yeah.
You know, a little, about 6'6". His big question mark at the NBA level is will he ever be able to make the three-point shot and be a threat from out there? Desmond never got there. We'll see if Quincy has the ability to do that and make himself more valuable.
And right now the Bucks fans are, me included, think that the Bucks are in a lot of trouble, both, you know, on the court and off the court because, you know, the owner, Herb Cole, is not getting any younger. He has no wife, no children, anything to give the team to when he does pass away. And on the court, like you kind of said, there really isn't any players with value other than maybe Jennings, probably maybe Larry Sanders, Bogut, some of those players. How big of trouble do you think that the Bucks are in for the next few seasons?
Well, yeah, I mean, what is a little difficult to see is how they're going to get a whole lot better other than Brandon Jennings developing and potentially Sanders developing. That was kind of my question this offseason. I wasn't a big fan of the moves the Bucks made, you know, paying as much as they did for Salmons and Drew Gooden and then also bringing on McGee. Because, you know, you were in a situation where you could have had cap flexibility in a couple of years if you would have played it differently. Obviously, you would have been sacrificing in terms of you wouldn't have had that kind of talent between now and then. But if you're not going to be a playoff team anyway, you know, I think the Bucks basically, one of the big things in basketball is you have to know your own talent and your own ability. That's the number one thing you have to know. And the Bucks overestimated it based on the fact that they made this great run after the trade deadline last year when John Salmons is playing out of his mind. And that's not who John Salmons is. You know, I don't think he's as bad as he's played so far this year either. I think he'll get better at some point. But they paid him based on the very best possible sample of his abilities. And then that's looking right now like a mistake.
There was a lot of questionable moves, even for fans during the off season. We were not big fans of, you know, the McGee trade, the Gooden signing, and the Osama signing. Me personally, I actually wanted to have like a younger like shooting guard, probably like half of what Osama's is getting paid, maybe like J.J. Redick type of player that can shoot and play some defense, but I guess Hammond wanted to stick with the guy that is used to playing with Milwaukee and John Salmons, and that move is not looking really good right now. Like, really none of the moves are really looking good right now. Gooden is injured, you know, McGee's actually been decent, but isn't a kind of player that we expected, but we did trade two scrubs for Benghetti, so I guess Golden State knew what we were getting.
Yeah, I mean, Benghetti is what you thought he was in terms of a guy who's going to score and rebound fairly effectively, and he's just going to be terrible at the other end of the floor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's kind of the player you're talking about that the Bucks need, who contrast their talents, but it still hasn't been enough because of the fact that the other guys have struggled so much on offense. So, you know, I think that's where you see trouble for the Bucks. I mean, they just can't score the basketball.
And I guess I really don't know what to say about the future. The future is not looking so bright. Things have really changed in the past 12 months since that Zalmas trade, and I guess a year ago, the Bucks were going on that big run to try to get the sixth seed in the playoffs, which we did. That was before, of course, the horrendous Bogut injury. Giannis was looking decent, and a lot really has changed, I guess, for the worse for Milwaukee.
You know, the interesting comparison, I would say, is maybe to what's happened in Detroit, where John Hammond came from. You see kind of a similar situation where the Pistons have a lot of older players. They're on long-term contracts. There's not a lot of cap flexibility at this point, and they're just not performing good enough to make the playoffs. So, you know, I think there's a lot of similarities between those two teams. So, I mean, you know, in Jennings, I think, is the hope. It's the guy that a lot of their future rests on. You know, he's maybe not taking the step people hoped he would take in his development this year, but he's still young enough to become one of the league's elite point guards. You know, he's still probably been their second best player, at least according to my metrics so far this year, after Andrew Bogut. So if you get Andrew Bogut healthy, if Jennings takes a step forward, then the offense can be good enough that if the defense continues to play at this level, then the Bucks can be good enough to compete.
This is actually kind of a more broad discussion. Do you like it when teams tank at the end of the season?
I don't like it when teams tank. I mean, I think you have to draw a distinction between, you know, the Timberwolves sending Mark Madsen out there to attempt 10 three-pointers or whatever they did in the last game of one of those seasons a few years back, as opposed to just kind of shifting your priorities and focusing on player development as opposed to winning games. So if it's a question of getting Chris Douglas Roberts more minutes, or, you know, there's not a lot of young talent necessarily in Milwaukee for them to showcase over the rest of the season. But if you're doing something like that and still going out and putting forward an honest effort every night, then I think that's completely fair and understandable and an appropriate view of your priorities as opposed to actively, you know, shutting guys down and trying to lose.
So I guess it really is too late for the Bucks to tank. Right now, we're probably sitting at the ninth or tenth pick in the draft, and this is really one of the weakest drafts since 2000. Am I right?
That's the guess right now, but it's kind of tough to say because of the fact that it's going to all be predicated on who actually enters this draft and how much guys are scared off by the potential of a lockout next summer. So it could be a solid draft. You know, I see some players out there in the NCAA ranks and even in Europe who can be productive contributors. But if a lot of those guys don't enter, then that's where a situation where you could see this being like a 2000 draft in terms of the lack of strength, especially at the top.
And of course, we still have the conference tournaments and the NCAA tournament deal with until then.
Yeah, a lot of entertaining basketball we watched at that level.
You're more of a pro guy than a college guy, right?
The college guy?
You're more of a pro guy in terms of than a college guy, right?
It's definitely my focus, but at Basketball Prospectus, we do both. So during the month of March, you know, as we get into the tournament, I'll definitely be covering the college game as well as the pro game. And you know, during the year, I follow the Pac-10 really closely. It's kind of more of a regional interest, but I know those teams very well, and sometimes the rest of the country not quite as well.
Actually, speaking of the Pac-10, there's a really good player that the Bucks fans are looking at for the draft. I think his name is he plays for Arizona. I think his name is Derek Williams.
Derek Williams, indeed, yeah, the likely Pac-10 Player of the Year, and in my opinion, should be up there in the discussion for National Player of the Year with guys like Fredette and Sullinger and Nolan Smith. We check out Derek Williams, who's extraordinarily efficient. He's a little bit undersized for the power forward position, but he makes up for the fact that with tremendous athleticism. Last Saturday, you may have seen on SportsCenter, he saved a game against my beloved Huskies with a block at the buzzer. That was one of the better athletic plays you're going to see. So when people talk to you about his lack of size, I don't have a huge concern because of what he can do in that regard. And, yeah, he gets to the free throw line constantly, lives at the line, finishes inside, very explosive, powerful player around the rim. And then also he's shooting somewhere around 70% from three-point range this season and has a chance, if he gets enough attempts and makes enough of them the rest of the season, to post the best three-point percentage in NCAA history. So he's a very talented player, and I think whoever gets him is going to be very happy with him.
Yeah, and actually, I'm looking at one of the websites, NBADraft.net, and they have him as the number one player. Actually, surprisingly, Sullinger is number four, but, you know, it's late February, and a lot of things can change, of course, with the conference tournaments, NBA draft, NCAA March Madness, and, of course, the draft combine. So it's still early to really be concerned about which team is picking who, but it's really fun to look at that. We're going to break away from regular basketball talk, and right now we're going to talk about some statistical work. Of course, you're very statistically knowledgeable, and I'm a big fan of learning about what the PER and the plus-minusing actually mean. I'm actually a big fan of the plus-minus, but one question I do have about the plus-minusing is, if, like, a bad player plays for a really good team, then he's going to have, like, a really good plus-minus. Let's say John Brockman is playing with a team that has Dwight Howard, LeBron, Paul, Wade, and those guys. He's going to have, like, a really good plus-minus. What's the argument for the plus-minus statistic?
Well, first off, I'm offended that you chose Sean Brockman as an example of a really bad player as a Husky again. But the way that we usually look at it is to not look so much at the raw plus-minus that is, like you said, very affected by the strength of the team, and to look at net plus-minus. That's the difference between how a team does with a certain player on the floor and with them on the bench. So that way, you're kind of doing a better job of isolating the player's own ability. Now, it's not anywhere near perfect because, first off, a lot of times you play units. So, you know, the Oklahoma City Thunder's bench with Ibaka and Collison and some of those guys, like we've talked about, tends to have much better plus-minuses than their starters. Doesn't mean that Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant aren't good players. It's just that they're playing in a unit that's less effective a lot of the time. The other thing you can see is when a guy has a really bad backup, that's a problem. So, for example, Phoenix this year, Goran Dragic has struggled tremendously. Steve Nash has one of the league's best net plus minuses. Not that he's not a great player, because he is, but you know, if you looked just at that, you'd think that, hey, this guy is one of the two or three best players in the league this year, and it's largely because of how bad Dragic has played. So you've got to use plus minus with care. What I like to do is look at several years of worth of plus minus and see whether you see a consistent pattern. So Shane Battier's example a few years ago, where every year he had a solidly positive plus minus with Memphis and then with Houston. At that point, we can be pretty sure that it's not because of any of these other factors. It's because of the fact that Battier is a good player and doing some things that aren't captured in the box score. Whereas if a guy's plus minus fluctuates wildly back and forth, then maybe it's not telling us an accurate story.
What are some other statistics you think that the casual, I guess, basketball fans should take a look at, other than for the main ones like points per game, assists, rebounds, which I think like assists per games like should really change. It's kind of like hits in baseball. There's like a lot of different like kinds of assists that you can actually get, and it's just like labeled in one particular like category.
Yeah, I think that the big thing that we try to do with statistical analysis is try to put everybody on a level playing field. So there are a few levels of that. The first is playing time. You can't really compare the statistics of a guy who's playing 40 minutes a game and a guy who's playing 20 minutes a game and say, well, he's averaging twice as many assists. Well, of course he is. He's out there twice as long. The next level to that then is pace of play. So, you know, a team like the Knicks or the Suns that plays in an up-tempo, you're going to have more opportunity to compile statistics than you are playing on a team like Portland or someone like that who plays more of a half-court style. So what we like to look at usually are stats that are denominated on a per-play basis out of how many plays you're on the court with your team. So, you know, doing that with assists and steals and blocks and things like that. With rebounds, we can do one better because it's the percentage of all rebounds that are available while you're out there on the floor. How many of those do you grab? That's kind of the fair playing field to compare players. And then scoring is a bit more complicated even than that because, you know, the next level is how many of the plays that your team has do you end up using by taking a shot or getting the free throw line or committing a turnover, which is wildly different and an important skill. So we measure the percentage of plays you use on the floor with usage rate. And then the efficiency, you know, there's a few different ways to look at it. The simplest way for scoring is what we call true shooting percentage. And that sort of estimates if every shot you took was a two-pointer, including trips to the free throw line, what would your field goal percentage be? So you can kind of compare it on the same scale as field goal percentage, even though naturally it's higher. So you want to look at those two kind of in combination because of the fact that the more possessions a player uses, the less efficient generally they become. You have guys like Carmelo Anthony, who is not particularly efficient in his own right, but he's still a very good offensive player because he uses so many possessions and keeps his teammates from having to take some of those difficult, bad shots and lowering their own shooting percentages. When you look at this with the Bucks, it really tells the story pretty quickly because there's only two guys on the roster, I think, when I glanced at it, who have above average true shooting percentages. It's Corey Maggette and it's John Brockman. So that right there goes a long way towards explaining why they have such a tough time scoring the basketball.
Wow. John Brockman, when you're looking at a true shooting percentage, just one of the top players, that's... I know that you're a big-time Washington fan, but that's really sad.
Yeah, and it's a case where he is one example we're talking about of a low use percentage, mostly attempting high percentage shots at the rim, but the Bucks just don't have enough guys like that. Even their role players, you know, Luke Richard and Bam Mute, he's not playing because of his offense, but he's a very inefficient scorer. And then there are guys who are taking a lot more of the possessions, like Jennings and Salmons, are also historically inefficient.
Yeah, you'll have to tell Bucks fans about the lack of offense skill of Luke Richard and Bam Mute, who can hit a shot that's longer than 5 feet. Actually, one of the stats that I like really don't like are, you know, the points per game and the rebounds per game. It really tells a lot, but when there's like a really good player like playing for like a bad team, he is gonna get the rebounds and he is gonna get a lot of points because he is a good player on a team filled with not so good players. You know, like one player could have like 20-25 points a game and like 10-15 rebounds per game, but when he goes to a good team, he's really not that good. I might be talking a bit about Chris Bosh, but I'm not gonna go there. So I guess sabermetric stats, I guess I can really use a better word when it comes to basketball. But do you kind of agree with me that points per game and rebounds per game are kind of don't tell the entire story?
Well, I think that's an example of where using that combination true shooting percentage and usage rate, again, does a better job of describing what kind of a scorer the player is. This year's example might be Michael Beasley, of a guy who has a high usage rate because of the fact that he does, as you said, play on a weaker team and has a low true shooting percentage, but is putting up a lot of points just because of the fact that he's getting so many attempts. You know, rebounding does tend to be more consistent from team to team. There's an interesting debate right now within the basketball analytics community about how meaningful rebound percentage is and how much players kind of take rebounds from each other. So a guy like Kevin Love, you know, is he having as much impact on the team's rebounding as it would appear based on his individual statistics, or are some of those rebounds that if he wasn't there to get them, Beasley would be getting, or Darko Milicic would be getting, and they're just not because of the fact that he's so good at rebounding? That's kind of a question that's open for debate. But, you know, it's not necessarily a good team, bad team split with rebounding as strongly as you see it with scoring.
Do you have anything else to add? Do you have anything else to add about the advanced stats compared to regular statistics?
I'm sorry, you said shit.
Oh, you didn't understand what I said?
Yeah, what compared to the advanced stats in the traditional set?
What do you have to say about the argument between the advanced statistics and the regular statistics like steals and points and all that stuff?
Well, I think the big thing is just knowing that everybody uses statistics in some form or another, even the people who are like, oh, I hate statistics. Well, you're still looking at everybody's points per game and rebounds per game. It's impossible not to see them. But they don't necessarily, you know, reflect the player's value as fairly as some of these more advanced metrics because of the fact that they're isolating the player's own ability to the extent that we can. Which we can't completely. It's not baseball. There's always going to be a lot of interaction effects between players and how they fit into systems and with coaches, but they're getting us more of the way there towards understanding what the player's own impact is.
Yeah, one other player I like to argue, this kind of like a college basketball reference, but still like a Bucks reference, John Brockman, I did post a lot of points when he was at Washington, right?
Yeah, he was a decent scorer.
I don't know what happened to that in Milwaukee, but, you know, he did post a lot of points, but all in all, he's just not that great of a player, and I don't know what Washington was like in, like, 2008, 2009, but when you're, like, a decent player playing with a, like I said, with a bunch of below-average players, then you're going to get a... you're going to get a lot of, load on you.
Well, I think the big thing with Brockman at the college level is being only 6'7" and not a guy who has a great athletic ability, he was able to get up shot attempts at the college level that he just can't get up in the NBA because he's going against guys who are 7 feet tall and can jump out the gym. So, you know, I actually wasn't sure when Brogdon was at Washington that he was going to be good enough to play in the NBA because of the fact he had got his shot blocked quite a bit even in college. And, you know, especially when he was going up against Jordan Hill was at Arizona that year and ended up being drafted in the lottery. It was a tough matchup for him. He got his own on the glass and, you know, got some garbage points, but he wasn't able to go one-on-one against him and still isn't at the NBA level. But Brockman has proven so good at the little things that in the appropriate doses, and not as a center. I mean, I think that's the big thing with Milwaukee. So you think his backup center, and he is not a help defender, can't block shots. It's really a terrible position to put him in. But last year, when he was playing power forward in Sacramento, he was fairly effective because he could just focus on the glass and put backs and things like that, and that's what he does best.
I really don't have much else to say. What do you have to plug when it comes to websites and everything?
Well, mainly Basketball Prospectus. We've gone to a premium model this year, so it's a subscription, $20 for a year. You know, it's basically the less than the cost of a magazine is going to cost you, and you're getting an average of probably about two articles a day from us on both college and pro basketball that are breaking things down like you don't see in other places. And then also ESPN Insider, catch me there a couple times a week. So I think that's all the plugging I need to do.
Of course, you forgot about the Twitter.
Oh, Twitter, K Pelton. Yes, P-E-L-T-O-N.
Well,
like Dean Pelton from Community.
Yeah, and of course, you've been being a big time celebrity. You don't really have to say that, but in case people are not following you on Twitter, of course, K Pelton, K-P-E-L-T-O-N on Twitter. And thanks, Kevin, for coming on the show.
I really appreciate you having me. Enjoyed talking trade deadline and a little bit about the Bucks.
All right. Thank you. And we'll be right back here on the Bucks Cast.
And the winner's Hove, my man. Speech. First of all, I want to thank my connect, the most important person with all due respect. Thanks to the duffel bag, the brown paper bag, the Nike shoe box for holding all this cash.
Okay.
Boys in blue who agreed before the badge.
Okay.
The first pusher who ever made the stash.
Okay.
The rock boys in the building tonight.
Hey.
Oh, what a feeling I'm feeling life.
Hey.
Thanks to the lanes, bad aim. Thanks to a little change, I tore you off the cane. Bullet wounds will stop your buffoonery. Thanks to the pastor rapping at your eulogy. To little Kim and them, you know the women friend who carry the word cross state for a gentleman. Yeah, thanks to all the hustlers. And most importantly, you, the customer. The rock boys in the building tonight. Oh,
okay, everybody, welcome back to the Bucks Cast. And right now, like last week, we're not going to go game by game by game by game, but we're just going to talk about the trade deadline for both the Bucks and other teams. And, of course, the Carmelo, the huge, huge Carmelo to the Knicks trade happened since the last episode, since we posted the last episode of the Bucks Cast. And Nick, what's your opinion on the Melo trade for both the Knicks and the Nuggets?
I guess I like the trade for the Knicks. They've been looking for the stars since they couldn't get LeBron last summer. They get Carmelo, who I like. It helps them a little bit this year to make a playoff push, but it really sets them up in the future. If they could get another star in line with them, they're talking about Chris Paul, but they have Chauncey Billups now, who I think is a...
But he's aging now.
I know, but he's a player that any good team will want.
Yeah.
But if they could add somebody like Chris Paul in the future to replace Chauncey Billups, that to have that type of big three, I'll probably take that big three over Miami's big three over any day, but...
Yeah, because they have a player at power four that can actually make more than one shot in an entire game. Right, Chris Bosh?
Yeah, that woman. And
what did you say?
Nothing. Sets him up for the future.
Bosh is a woman?
Yeah. And for Denver, they got a lot of good players, and they got some draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
If they could use these pieces wisely and make them turn into something, to a bigger piece, they could package those players and picks for someone bigger. They could, but it's a wait and see for the Denver to see what they could turn these pieces they got for Melo into.
Yeah, but
they got some
nice talent, though. Chandler, Felton, picks. Even though the pick there for not this year, but they got some nice younger players. Like Felton is 20, about the same age as Melo. Chandler Gallinari are younger, and Timofey Mozgov is a nice, nice center for the future.
I think Gallinari had about 30 points the other night, and Chandler had 18 on the first game for Denver. So they got some good players, and George Karl seems to like the pieces he have, and if he could turn, if he could develop one of the few coaches who could develop young talent, it's George Karl.
If George Karl stays,
despite what you think of him, but he could develop talent better than any coach out there. So,
I don't think he's gonna stay though. That's the thing. I don't think he's gonna stay to watch those guys develop because he is getting older, and of course, he's had the health issues.
Yeah, I agree. Can you hear?
Yeah, I can hear.
Oh.
So there's some other big trades, of course. Darren Williams to the Nets. Of course, you heard my opinion on it in the interview with the guy from Basketball Prospectus. So Nick, what's your opinion on the Darren Williams trade to the Nets? That sent Devin Harris and Derek Favors to the Jazz.
Well, hopefully the Nets can extend Darren Williams next offseason, or this will just be a waste of trade. They tried to get Melo, then they knew he didn't want to go there. He wanted to go to the Knicks, so when that didn't work out, they right away went for the next big star that they could get.
Mm-hmm. We happen to be point guards in the league, so.
And for Utah, I was shocked that they did this deal. I mean, I know the fallout when Jerry Sloan resigned and everyone's blamed Darren Williams, so maybe they felt they had to get rid of him to please the fans in Utah because they were mad at him, and they knew that he wasn't going to be there in a couple years, so they had to get something for him now. But they got some, Derek Favors, if he could develop into the player everyone thinks he can, then this could turn out to be a great trade for Utah because they get Devin Harris.
And Devin Harris, remember a few years ago, he used to be an all-star point guard.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a superstar at the level of Williams or Paul, but he's a player, he's a key player.
He's kind of like at the Chauncey Billups level.
Yeah, I was thinking that, but yeah, because he was a starter in the finals for the Mavericks, so.
Team that should have won the finals.
Yeah, so he's been part of some winning team. He's one of those players that you could put on your team, and he's a key player you could have on any team.
Yeah.
He's not the player, but he's one of the players that you could have on your team.
But this whole situation in Utah has really, really changed in the past, 3 weeks. Two weeks ago, of course, Jerry Sloan retired after, 25 years? Something crazy like that. And now it's because of the whole Darren Williams situation, we think. And now Darren Williams is gone. So they lost both Sloan and Williams to keys to the team in the past, 5 years. For Sloan, it's been the past 20-plus years. He's been around since Stockton, Stockton, not Malone days. And now now he's gone, and things have really changed for the better or for worse in Utah.
Yeah, it must be tough to be a Utah fan during these times, but yeah, a lot of changes to have a coach that I pretty much known from my lifetime span, Jerry Sloan, and pretty much for any young NBA fan, Jerry Sloan's always been there, and they had Darren Williams, who was a star after they were trying to find, after Stockton Malone retired, so now he's gone, so now they're pretty much starting all over. Before, when they had to start over after Stockton Malone, you still had Jerry Sloan to still carry the tradition on. But now they they're starting completely over with a new style of play.
Yeah, just remember, like last season, they had Boozer, they had an up-and-coming young kid, one of their favorite players in the NBA, of course, and Wesley Matthews. Now, all those guys are gone. They had Kyle Korver, who could knock down the three. He's gone in Chicago. And, like, I don't really know a lot of players. Other than, you know, maybe Paul Millsap, of course, like you said, Favors and Devin Harris. I really don't know a lot of Utah Jazz players anymore. You
know? They got Al Jefferson.
Yeah.
Pretty it was good.
When he's not injured.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so,
yeah, they got Gordon Hayward from Butler. I think it's going to be a buzz, but he's still a top 10 pick.
Yeah, so it was his team to beat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they just basically just wanted him out of Memphis. But Memphis got a... I really do like Shane Battier. He just... I think he could be a coach one day. He just that smart of a, you know, player. A player that I... would be a perfect fit for Milwaukee. Just a smart player that could play D and just knock down some shots.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Milwaukee would love him. Any team in the league would love to have a player like Shane Battier. Because he's one of those role players. He it may not show up on a box score, but his impact on the team he plays on is just even just his presence, his defense, his passing ability, just his presence alone just is good for any team. And Memphis trying to make a playoff push, they need a player like him, a veteran leader on the floor, because they don't really have any veterans on the team right now.
Not an ultimate stiff bust in the beat.
Oh, yeah, and they got rid of the beat, which, yeah. They passed up all those point guards they could have had. That would have been great for this team, but... Oh, well. Things happen in the draft.
They could have Stephen Curry, Tyreek Evans, but now they had to get it, shoot the beat.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some other trades and trades that the Bucks should have made. What did you say?
So I don't know what trade they could have made.
There's some like talk and like real jam, but Bucks fans are talking like we could have got like Darryl Wallace even to Portland, and Charlotte got like Dropin's Villa and Dante Cunningham. Like we could have made that trade. We seriously could have. You know, make that trade. Probably like Ilya Sova and some other player for Gerald Wallace, who is one of my favorite non-Bucks. You know, like, he's just a really, really talented player. And also, Trey Murphy, one of the other players the Bucks fans wanted, got sent to Golden State, but Golden State bought him out, and now he's probably going to Boston. Like, I actually talking about this, like, these, like, good, talented players, like, I know people probably think that Trey Murphy's trash, but he's a big guy that can, you know, knock down the three. He can shoot, which we kind of need right now, and Darryl Wall is just better than anything that we got right now, any small forward since Glenn Robinson.
Yeah.
He would be the best small forward since Glenn Robinson.
Yeah.
Of course, Joe Wallace, of course. He's not going to be better than Glenn Robinson. Nick has just an insane obsession with Big Dog. Right, Nick?
What call it? A insane obsession, but okay.
Just really, really like the guy.
Has there been a better small forward on this team since him? No.
Wallace would be up to a slot worry, I would think.
I would not agree with that, but okay.
Okay. So, all right. Awkward silence, but there really isn't that much to talk about. If the Bucks would have made a trade, we could have talked about that, but we didn't. Thank you.
They could also trade it for the fifth pick in 2003 and got Dwayne Wade, but they didn't.
Yeah, but they didn't. Traded one of the best three-point shooter in the NBA history for...
They made a lot of trades that they shouldn't have made.
Yeah, we've had like two GMs that have made crappy trades. And do you believe in the whole fire John Hammond thing?
No, I think he did everything he could to make this team better, and we all thought that they were going to have a great season, but just injuries and things just didn't work out. So I don't think it's Hammond's fault, even though you look at it now, you can say, oh, huh?
What about the Drew Ginn signing?
I mean, I didn't like the signing when it happened, but I could see where he was coming from, and you just can't fire a guy for trying to make this team better. Maybe next year they have the same exact season, then him and Skiles have to go.
Yeah.
That's a no-brainer,
but
I just feel things. I just think you gotta give it one more year because he added a lot of new pieces and.
Most of them have been injured for a good part of the season.
Because last year's team, it wasn't that many injuries and everyone just clicked at the right time and we just got on a roll. And you just haven't seen that this year and you can't put that on. Because Hammond got the player talent out there, they just can't hit a shot. It's not really on.
I think it would be best like get the eighth or ninth pick. Even though this is one of like the weakest drafts since 2000, there has to be a guy that can shoot out there, and we need a shooter. We need a guy to put the ball in the basket. And people are saying, "Well, what about Mike Redd? What about Mike Redd?" No.
And remember, you got Darrington Hopson coming in next year. I mean, yeah. I don't know if he's a shooter, but that's another young.
We don't know anything about him.
We don't know nothing about him, but everything we hear, I mean, he was a high second round pick, so yeah. Everything we hear that he's got some skills, and I mean, just the players are going to come back healthy next year, and another rookie, and Larry Sanders will have another year on his belt.
I'm actually a big time Larry Sanders fan. I know people.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, I am too.
He got sent to D-League for like two games. Now he's back. Now he can make shots. Look at your mom saying that Bulls game was making mid-range shots. I don't know what was with Lucas Mamute in that Bulls game, but he was making shots consistently. Like, what? Like, what? Like 17, 18-foot, you know, jumpers. He was wide open because of the fact that he has a history of not being able to put the ball in the hoop, but he was putting the ball in the hoop, which we needed. You know? And I'm one of the biggest optimists ever. For the past 2 years, I've been thinking that the Brewers can make the playoffs, even though the rotation has been crap. And I thought that Brayden Looper would be good, and all these players would be good, even though they weren't. I'm an optimist. And I think that this team could be maybe like the 6th or 5th team next year. Because, you know, point guards have a history of, like, just, like, doing really good in their, you know, third year. And next year is going to be, you know, Brandon Jennings, you know, third year. And I really do hope he's going to just buckle down, just work on his game this offseason. Nick?
Yes?
What's your opinion?
I'm optimistic with you. I mean, I don't know. Brandon Jennings was playing really good up until the point he broke his foot. And ever since he came back, he had a couple of good games, but just really couldn't put it together. And I know he's a little upset that you heard he had an interview saying that the offense is not running through him like last year. And he has to find his spots to shoot. Maybe he's not comfortable shooting. I hope everyone.
It's only 21.
I know everyone in that locker room has to be frustrated of the way the season is going because everyone was so hyped before the season. But they could just. Someone just needs to be in there to keep the head up. That's why I wish there was a veteran presence.
Eckery Thomas and Jerry Stackhouse. Sign Jerry Stackhouse. Sign right. Jerry Sackhouse like, next year to be like the 12th man.
Right. If we had those two in the locker room, or one of them in the locker room for this year, and I just feel one of them could just keep the attitudes in there, just mm-hmm. at a positive level. But I just hope things don't get out of hand, and this summer people don't want to play for the Bucks, or they just need to come back next year. Just
like,
forget
who really
about
wants to be in Milwaukee compared to LA, Miami,
right?
New York.
I'm gonna write off this season because it's.
There's only 21 games left, and we're like five games behind the East spot.
Yeah, they don't go on a 10-game winning streak. They're in the playoffs, probably. So, but that's not gonna happen until they learn how to make a jumper.
Consistently.
This is a regular 2-point mid-range shot. It doesn't have, not even a three.
Maybe Luke Richard could just, you know, energize everybody and have them making shots. Maybe we could be like 60% shooting in one game and just have everybody come back in the Bucks bandwagon. Like, oh my god, Brandon James got 30, Bogut got 20, and nothing about Bogut. He's hurt. Okay? Don't just say negative stuff about Bogut. He is hurt. Everybody knows it. If you don't know it, you're an idiot. The dude is hurt, okay? And the Bucks should, I repeat, should shut him down for the rest of the season. But the Bucks injury team or whatever, medical team, just basically have been sucking for a while now, and they guess don't know it. But he should be shut down for the rest of the season. Should have surgery again. And he should... I want him to be back to what he was last season, but I don't think he will.
I will say this. The one positive is that this team you see now, majority of them will all be together next year because they're
pretty
much...
But isn't Luke Richard a free agent this year?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he is. I mean, the main pieces like Maggette, Delfino, Jennings, Bogut, Salmon's good.
Yeah, I say that now.
Sanders. I'm just saying they're all going to be here next year because they're pretty much not going to be moved. It's going to be hard to move any of them. But I'm just saying they will all be back together next year, and at least they'll know each other coming in next year. You won't have too many new faces. But maybe you will because once you have a bad season like this, you know, moves have to be made. That's what Hammond said when he got hired. Because if you can't have a 20-win team and keep the same faces around, but nobody's going to want Gooden or Salmons. Or Maggette, probably. Maybe you can move Maggette. Maybe.
Yeah. But we'd probably have to have like a Gerald Wallace type trade, which is probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
I think Hammond is too smart to make that trade. I hope he is.
But Gooden and Salmons are going to be here for a while.
Yeah. They're probably good for bad.
Yeah, they're probably going to play out their contract as a book unless they're bought out.
Yeah. I think this is like the first time in a long time that Duke Gooden actually said, hey, I can save this team for a while. I don't have to be moved like three times in 3 years. I can probably buy like an apartment or a condo or something in Milwaukee.
Yeah,
because he has a nice 5-year contract, and you know what? There might not even be any NBA next year.
All right. You still got Derek Thompson. I keep mentioning that, but
yeah,
and people laugh at me, but I'm just—he's
a second rounder. But look at the guy that the Knicks have in Landry Fields. You know, I think it was drafted after Hobson.
Hey, but we don't know how Hobson is gonna be. He could average a triple double. Just you watch.
Okay, Mr. Oscar Robertson.
He should be our starting small forward, actually.
All right, you say that.
I'm just...
Yeah, you're just...
Right now.
That's why in the next like few episodes of the Bucks Fest, we're probably going to have more guests just you know, kind of shy away from the negative book talk, which we've been doing for the past few episodes. We're just gonna try to stay positive.
You know the sad thing from the first show, how we were all positive about the first
4 or 5 episodes, we were just all positive. I remember talking like Jim Paschke. We're like, he said something like we could compete with the Bulls, and now the Bulls have like an MVP candidate. And
even the Bucks did have the season we would expect. I don't even think they'll be close to the Bulls right now, the way the Bulls are playing.
You need to spend.
Because I would expect the Bucks to be like 10 games, over 500 maybe. Yeah. But the Bulls are just on a whole different level right now.
Yeah. Next year, it's way too early to, you know, predict, but I can possibly see us maybe like being a few games below what we were in 2009-10. I have like 43 wins or something like that.
No, I don't expect them to be what they were last year.
No, like a few games worse next year.
No, I mean, I want them to be 46 wins or higher next year. Yeah.
But I'm not.
Even though I know they're on pace to lose 50 games, I expect a huge bounce back.
Yeah. Hopefully.
No excuses. No 43, 44 wins. That's unacceptable. That's just me personally. Maybe that's not the expectation.
And you're the guy that said the Bucks were better than Bulls.
I'm just saying.
And
Jennings would be in his third year. No excuses to suck.
Yeah, I guess so. We should be fifth or sixth seed, because let's actually we're gonna probably leave in a few minutes, but before then, let's actually take a look at the future of the Eastern Conference. The Celtics are getting older. Pierce is getting older. Allen is getting older, and of course Garnett.
They added Jeff Green, who I think still has untapped potential.
Yeah, they did add Jeff Green, but they got rid of, you know, their center, even though he's been injured. He's still the center, and he's still Kendrick Perkins, and he's still a beast when he's healthy. And do you think that Jeff Green's gonna be what Paul Pierce was? I don't think so. Do you think Big Baby Davis is gonna be even close to what Garnett was in 2008?
I'm not saying that he's gonna come in and they're gonna keep winning like that. I just think they have a piece that they will have Rondo and Green, and those are two pieces I feel you could build around.
I'm not
saying Green is your star player, you're the future, but just some Rondo and Green are just. I think that's a move that people are saying is dumb. They're getting rid of their big man, but they have to worry about their future because they're, like you said, they're getting old. So
quickly,
but I think Green getting a young, great, good player with great potential, it just only helps this team in the future, not this year, because they needed Perkins probably for this playoff run, but they had to worry about their future first.
You know, they
just
were like
just like how the Packers got rid of Brett Favre and started Aaron Rodgers. Maybe they could have won with Brett Favre that year, but they had to worry about their future.
Okay.
Not even a close situation, but the mentality of management is we're put in the same situation.
Okay, now let's take a look at the Orlando Magic and who is it? Dwight? I think, Dwight's a free agent next year, isn't he? Again, the 2000, this upcoming free agency, but next year in 2012 free agency, he's going to be free agent. And frankly, they need Dwight Howard badly. Because if they don't have Dwight Howard, they're going to be a solid team. And that's a fact.
He's going to go to the Lakers, like Shaq.
Should I say it? I don't think I should say it. But I don't think any Laker fans are listening. No. Kobe Bryant is overrated.
What?
I don't care if he has 5 rings. 3 of them were with Shaq. And he's overrated.
What?
He's overrated, no. Kobe Bryant.
You're joking, right?
I don't think I am.
How is he? What?
He's overrated. I know he's a great player, but not a top 5 player, like people say, not a top 10 player.
Why
not a top? No, I'm talking all time.
Oh, okay.
like Kobe MVP, MVP, every single like ooh fadeaway shot MVP, MVP, MVP. Shut up, Laker fans. You only arrive at the games in the third quarter. Bandwagon fans. He's not an MVP. He's a good player, but he won.
So you're saying it's overrated in terms of compared to all-time players?
No, I don't. I think it's like, I know they play different positions, but I think like he's like Dominique Wilkins, just like a better like Dominique Wilkins when it comes to all-time.
You're saying he's overrated compared to like the top 50 all-time.
Yeah, I think there's like I've got players better.
Like, not overrated in terms of his era, but all time.
All time. Like, he's probably one of the best, but he won 3 championships with Shaquille O'Neal. That was probably one of the
Most clutch player of you. One of the top clutch players of all time.
Yeah, so was Robert Horry.
Who?
Robert Horry.
No, but come on!
But okay, can I explain something for a second? He won 3 championships with Shaq when he was in his prime. Well, Shaq was one of the best centers in NBA history. He had in the NBA history numbers.
That's not his fault. A lot of great players win with other great players on their team.
But Shaq, at that time, was one of the best centers ever. Ever. I know Michael Jordan had Pippen, but Pippen wasn't the best player at his position at that time ever. Oh.
You would not take that away from Scottie Pippen.
Scottie Pippen is... I'm not acting like Skip Bayless when I say he shouldn't be a Hall of Famer. He should be. He's Scottie Pippen. He's awesome.
What about the last 2 championships? You don't think Kobe...
I give that to him, but he's not... Laker fans think of him as the best Laker of all time. I still give that to Magic or Jerry West. I still give that to him. If he wins 2 more championships, then I give it to him. But he's not the best Laker of all time.
Well, I didn't say all that.
Like people haven't said that. He's the best Laker.
Well Laker fans are not the most intelligent basketball people, so.
I think that he's a top 10 player, but not the best.
I'm just saying.
Nobody ever is going to be at Jordan's level. Nobody. Stop saying that he's going
to
be like
Jordan. No, nobody. Nobody's Jordan. Yeah. Kobe is the closest we have to Jordan.
Yeah. Yeah, well, nobody will match what he, like, 88 to, 98 Jordan. Nobody will
Kobe
match.
Is the closest we have to Jordan. Dwayne Wade is the closest we will have to Kobe Bryant. If that makes any sense.
I'm not like some people saying that, Kobe Bryant. I'm sure people out there say, Kobe Bryant's not a Hall of Famer. He's a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer. But I put him, even think I put him in my top 10 of all time. Maybe top 15, but not top 10. But he still has a few years left in him. That's just my opinion. I know Nick doesn't probably agree with me, but
I see what you're coming from. I don't know where I rate Kobe in all time since. I'm not a Kobe fan, but I respect him.
Yeah, me too. Other than for everything he did in Colorado.
He didn't really do anything wrong. Yeah. Let's not get into that, but okay.
But all-time Lakers, Magic is ahead of him. Jerry West is ahead of him. Probably, reading the Bill Simmons book right now, and I don't know, Will Chamberlain's ahead of him because Kobe has won more championships than Wilt, and he's a better, clutch player than Wilt. But maybe Elgin Baylor is ahead. He's maybe Kareem. But Kobe Bryant, probably one of the top 5 players of the 2000s. I would give that to him, but I don't think he's a top 10 player of all time yet. Even though he has won rings, but most of those rings were with Shaquille O'Neal when Shaquille O'Neal was the best. I give it to him in the clutch, but I don't know. There's still, Kobe still has few good years left in him. Do you agree? I just had to go on a tangent there.
Yeah, huh? I'll let you do you, Kobe Bryant. I'm not defending Kobe. I stopped doing that years ago.
After the whole Kyle Rossin.
Oh, no, I hated him before up to that point. And then people started hating him, then I defended him.
Yeah.
Now they like him like he's God again, so...
I know that Nick probably has a few rants in him, maybe about a guy that wore number 22.
Oh, my God, no.
Maybe we can go into that next episode.
Yeah.
So your rant about a guy that wore number 22 from... was the best player from 2002 to 2008.
Oh, my God.
His last name is also a name of a specific color. The color of things like blood. But I'm not going to say his name. Maybe his first name starts with Michael. Maybe his last name starts with a color. Maybe Nick is going to yell. Maybe Nick is going to argue why Glenn Robinson's the top five buck of all time. And maybe when we have Abe on next week, maybe Abe is going to argue that with him. But I guess that wraps up the show. We've been going on a tangent for a while.
Abe wouldn't argue with that.
Yeah, I think that Abe would. And I'll just sit back, just laughing.
You know what? But Abe is probably wrong on 90% of stuff he says anyway. So.
But you agree with him on 90% of the stuff he says. We're still recording this. This is still live on the Bucks, but you agree with most of the stuff that Abe says. Oh, I agree, Abe. Ooh, he's so good.
You know what? Maybe I don't know. He makes things sound so smart and right. You know what? I said too much. I'm going to stop.
Yeah. Dakota_Schmidt, Bucks@gmail.com. Nick. You go.
Follow me, Black MacGyver. That's black like the color, and MacGyver like the show. You have
yes, black like the color, and MacGyver like the TV show.
Follow me, or I will find you and murder you.
Aww, what do people know that Twitter?
Wow, did I just say that?
Nick McIver's opinions do not express the opinions of Bucks and Dakota Schmidt. Take everything he says with a grain of salt. Of course, I'm Dakota Schmidt. This is Nick McIver, who's not going to kill you. Hopefully. And this has been episode number 18 of the Bucks Cast. Goodbye, everybody.